Brew Strong is brought to you by morebeer.com, where a man can brew like a man.
Brewers, it's time for the beer radio you've been looking for. This is the show that dispels myths, tackles the toughest topics, and makes no apologies for geeking out on beer. Hosted by two guys that drink before they think, Jamil Zainasheff and John Palmer. This is Brew Strong.
Hey, howdy, hey, my brewing brothers and sisters.
Back going?
Another, what is it, like Fat Albert is sitting over here?
The first thing came to mind, yes.
Fat Palmer.
Okay, I'll work on a new one for next week.
Oh, it's good to be back in the studio with all my pals here. And another glorious episode of Brew Strong. Today,
yes.
Got me, Jamil Zainasheff. Got my good buddy, John Palmer.
And, hi, everybody.
And we've got Nick Burton joining us again.
Bruce Lacker.
Yeah. The BS.
Good to see you here, Buck.
Good to be here. Good to hear your voice. Good to be here all together talking about how to brew strong.
Oh, and Justin's sitting here, too.
Hi.
Hi.
It's like a stepchild on this show.
Yeah. You know, hey, you push the buttons. anyways, it's good to be back. I feel like it's been ages since we've been here in the studio. During whatever break, I think,
well, you had Beer Week, San Francisco.
Yeah.
Is that thrown in there?
Yeah, we kicked off the Can You Brew It show.
That's right.
Which is
very cool show.
Yeah. The Jamil show became Jamil Show Can You Brew It, and that's the show where we are challenged to clone a beer that the listeners send in. They tell us what beer they want us to clone, and we do some research. We talk to the brewery. We do whatever we can to get the information on how to brew that beer. We brew it, and then blind tasting in the studio, they get compared side by side, and we see if we succeed or not. And the cool thing is, from that, instead of a clone recipe that kind of sort of gets you in the general vicinity, this is, a clone recipe that'll get you there. This'll do it for you. So that show airs kind of opposite this one every Monday night, right?
Yep.
Justin? In between, so you get a Brew Strong, then you get a Can You Brew It, then you get a Brew Strong, then you Can You Brew It. And good listening. I'm already excited. Tasty McDowell and I have been doing the shows, and it's a lot of fun. I've been enjoying brewing those as well.
Well, not to bash anyone, but pretty much every clone brew book out there sucks. So it's good to have real tried and true recipes. And some of these actually are coming, the recipes from the brewers themselves, right?
Oh, yeah. We talked to the brewers, and some are more forthcoming than others.
Right.
But we've been lucky. You get somebody on the radio, and I think something happens. They tend to loosen up a little bit more, and instead of just saying approximation, some of them give you every detail you need to know. And I think that's one of the beauties of having the Brewing Network contact them, and Justin gets them set up, and then they're on the air, and they almost can't say no.
Well, the moose drool you did, I know you nailed that.
Yeah, that turned out great. That was our first one. It was real successful.
And you did Firestone too, right?
Firestone DBA, but that one had to be brewed before we talked to the brewer, and so the recipe was like from some old recipe that Mike was working from, and so that one we kind of came up a little short. But we'll be rebrewing that and revisiting that. We're not going to let a beer go without cloning it. It may take us multiple shots, but we'll get it to where you drink them side by side, and you go, well, I'm not sure which one is a double barrel ale.
Really?
So that's the goal of the show.
Well, not to mention, it gets you back in the brew house too.
Yeah, I'm
these
loving it.
Brewed by yours truly, right?
Yeah. Not all of them will be, but I take on a challenge at least once a month, and Tasty takes on a challenge, and we also might have a few other brewers that we trust knock a few of these out.
Oh yeah,
for for example, Chad, you know, he's an excellent brewer, and he's enjoying this really killer IPA now.
Man, this is great. I wonder if he repitched his yeast in this.
Yeah. Well, and if you like the programming that you hear, you like the Brew Strong, you like the Can You Brew It, maybe you even like that Sunday show, The Session, which is pretty decent from time to time, I think. You'll want to get yourself over to the Brewing Network store, thebrewingnetwork.com/store. We have signed Brewing Classic Styles available. They were out, and now they're back available in the store. I will be signing them tonight, so go ahead and pick yourself up a copy if you haven't already. It helps keep things going. There's also a they're doing these regular monthly raffles. And this month is going to be Whirlpool Chiller. Now, I use a Whirlpool Chiller. I know Nick uses one. Oh, Justin uses one. I love my Whirlpool Chiller. And it's been donated by More Beer. And so a nice commercially made example. You don't have to cobble one together yourself. And if you are a recurring donation, signed up for recurring donation, doesn't matter for whatever amount, if you're signed up for $2 recurring, you automatically are entered every month into the raffle. So you got an entry in there. They're giving away, you know, all sorts of great stuff. What did they give away last month, Justin?
We skipped last month. That's the only one we skipped because of SF Beer Week. We had it off, off
right,
show
right.
week.
Right.
But what we've done so far, we've done a conical. We did a full keg setup after that.
Full keg setup. Those are great.
Yeah, everything but the kegerator we gave for that one.
Wow.
And one of our Danish listeners won that. So it's an international thing. We'll
ship
to you.
Some serious shipping charges.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, we have so many listeners all over. We hate to exclude.
It's worldwide.
Yeah, and it's gone well. You know, like you're saying, for a fraction of the cost of these items, you get entered into the raffle. Right. And if you miss out, if you don't win, you're supporting the show. So
yeah, exactly. And if you're not already a recurring donator, if you haven't signed up for that on the homepage there, you can sign up for just $5 gets you an entry in the raffle. So every $5 you put in, you get an entry. If this is the item you really like.
Especially this one. If somebody said, I'd take your conical or I'd take your Whirlpool Chiller, I'd give them the conical.
You got to have a Whirlpool Chiller. Yeah. That's a great device, actually. Of all the things that were mentioned, I would take that. I'd take the Whirlpool Chiller first.
That's what I thought would be a really cool thing for people. Even if you already have a chiller, a regular immersion chiller, you don't have to upgrade too much here just to get this immersion chiller with the Whirlpool.
Yeah.
And then just to be clear, even though it's $5 if you want to donate as a one-time donator to get into this raffle, every increment of $5 puts your name in the hat. But as Jamil said, if you sign up as a recurring donator, even for as low as $2, that's our minimum recurring donator, you automatically get your name in the hat for every donation we do. So it's a discount even for one ticket. If you wanted to just sign up for the small one, that's fine by us. So.
And the purpose of the whole thing is it helps keep the lights on, keep the bandwidth humming so you can download all this stuff and hear it live, join the chat, all that stuff, the forums. It's it's pricey with this amount of content and listeners. It gets pricey. Justin's picking up a big tab there. So if you get a chance, pick yourself up a book or a shirt or whatever might find that fits your fancy in the store.
And, glasses and the glasses are really cool too.
Do you have glasses now, Justin? He probably doesn't have glasses right now.
I can't see anything. Oh, you meant glasses to drink out of? Yeah. No, we just poured into our hands and
no glasses.
Okay.
Good ways to support the store, and thanks More Beer for donating all that great gear and support them as well. And tonight. All your support is getting you a show on repitching yeast. I got an email in from a guy, C.P. Dorman, out of Massachusetts, and he said, "Hi, Mr. Malty, I'd like your input. I just finished an alt. I saved the yeast from the bottom of the carboy. I want to start a new alt. can I just pour the yeast as is at proper fermentation temperature into the next batch or carboy?
That's a good question. I think pretty much every home brewer after their first batch wants to know, what can I do with the yeast? So what exactly is repitching yeast?
That's a good question. Let's start with the basics. So repitching yeast, when you ferment a batch and you rack that beer out into your bottling bucket or into your keg or what have you, you may notice at the bottom there's a lot more yeast than what you started with. You added a certain amount of yeast. Maybe you added a vial of White Labs or a pack of Y yeast or maybe even dry yeast. The volume of yeast at the bottom of the carboy or bucket or conical is much more than what you started with. Well, you could take that yeast and you can reuse it. There's some kind of specialized rules about reusing that yeast and how you go about reusing it, and that's what we're going to talk about. And but you can actually make another batch of beer from that yeast. And it may even turn out better than the first batch.
Why would you do that? I mean, I can go down to my local homebrew shop, pick up a fresh vial of yeast, pitch that right in. We've already had a show on starters. You could do that. Why would you repitch your yeast?
That's an excellent question. I'll tell you what. Why don't we take a short break? And when we come back, we'll get into all the whys, wherefores, and how-tos back after this.
Smart. Brew strong. This is Brew Strong.
Hey, Push, the new brewery's looking good.
Thanks, Finn. Piece by piece.
Well, let's fire her up. Whoa! Is that a new kettle?
Yeah, just got it brand new, but paid half price.
What? And that blade scale?
40% off.
The new tap handle?
$5 instead of 13. Got a new regulator for the brew stand, too, but $5 instead of 25.
Dude, where are you stealing all this stuff from?
Where else? The More Beer deal of the day.
Announcing the Beer, Beer, and More Beer deal of the day. Every day, a new fantastic deal from big items to small that will blow you away. Boil kettles, carboy carriers, sterile siphon starters, digital timers. Watch morebeer.com every day for a new deal, and you just might find the item you've been waiting for at a price you cannot believe. Hurry, because stock is limited on most items.
And that sweet Guinness cap, let me guess.
The More Beer deal of the day.
Yeah, I knew it. Come on, let's brew something. Find the More Beer deal of the day at morebeer.com. Celebrity voices impersonated.
The Brewing Network brings together the winner of the Sam Adams Long Shot competition and the most awarded homebrewer in history to do battle in the next chapter of the Jamil Show. Can you brew it? Every episode, Jamil Zainasheff and Mike McDowell lay their reputations on the line to brew your favorite commercial beer and put their results to the test. Perfect match or perfect drain pour. Tune in for the recipes, techniques, and interviews with the pros that answer the question, can you brew it? The Jamil Show, Can You Brew It? Airs every other Monday on the Brewing Network. White Labs, your source for maltose mowing monsters, announces the White Labs Platinum lineup for 2009. Looking for out-of-the-ordinary yeast to make the best beer possible? The Platinum strains from White Labs are only available for a limited time and make your homebrew stand out. Through February, find Australian Ale, Essex Ale, and Dusseldorf Alt Yeast. March and April, it's Nottingham Ale, Abbey 4, and Mexican Lager Yeast. And May through June, don't miss Premium Bitter Ale, Belgian Wit 2, and Belgian Bastogne Ale Yeast. Keep up with all the great yeasts in the White Labs Platinum Program at whitelabs.com, where you can also join the White Labs Customer Club. Brew with the freshest and most unique yeast with the White Labs 2009 Platinum Strains. White Labs. It's all in the vial.
Live. Beer Radio. The Brewing Network.
The Brewcasters.
If you're just starting, don't be discouraged by all this stuff. Exactly. It's so easy.
Just throw it together.
Dude. Put some sugar and some water and some yeast in there.
Yeah.
Network.
Like the Lance Armstrong of the beer world. Except for that nut thing.
This is Brew Strong.
All right, we're back. We're talking about repitching yeast.
Oh, yeah. You repitch your yeast, John?
Yeah, I do. Not terribly often these days, but I do like to, you know, you get the nice solid yeast cake there, and seems a shame to throw it out.
Not too often. Does that mean you're not brewing, or are you just lazy?
Not brewing as much as I would like to. But I have the new rim system complete.
Oh.
And I plan to start brewing very soon on that thing.
Well, perfect. Sweet. Perfect time to repitch.
Yeah.
So, Jamil, Jamil told us exactly what repitching was, but again, I'm baffled. Why is any home brewer going to go to the trouble to do that?
Mm-hmm. When you can just go and buy more yeast.
Yeah.
Well, a couple things. The most obvious that I think people will key on is, well, it's going to be much cheaper for me. I don't have to go buy yeast a second time. I can just reuse that yeast, right? Well,
and you may not need to make a starter either. There's that convenience factor.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing, though, and you ask any professional brewer, they'll tell you that first pitch off a new package of yeast, it'll do well, and you'll get good fermentation. But you know, the second pitch off that yeast is even better, and then the third pitch, really, the yeast kind of seem to hit their stride. You're selecting for yeast that do well in that beer or whatever it is, but that's where the yeast are really humming along and the beer really seems great.
So it sounds like if you're not repitching your yeast, you could be at a disadvantage then potentially.
Right. I think the best beers actually are made from repitched yeast.
Well, there you go. One other thing.
Yeah. So, and you know, that comes with a lot of caveats. You know, as far as, you know, health and sanitation and things like that.
So the fellow who wrote in the email there, he obviously had this big slurry, and I know a lot of people are just saying, hey, just take that and dump it right into the next batch, right?
Yeah, a lot of people say that that's what they do. They just dump new wort on the yeast cake, and, oh, you know, there you go. It works perfectly. Well, I'm not so sure that's true.
Right.
You're done with fermentation, so here we are. I'm done. I've finished my primary fermentation. Maybe I've done a secondary fermentation. Am I going to be using the yeast off of the primary or the secondary? What do you think?
Well, go ahead, John.
Generally off the primary. If you're harvesting from the secondary, generally that's a... you've tended to select in the secondary for less flocculent yeast, or you've pitched in the secondary with added fruit juice or puree or something. So it isn't exactly your prime strain at that point.
Right. Well, one problem you can have is if you start selecting for the less flocculent yeast, you end up with it becomes powdery. It'll stay in suspension. It won't clear. And that happens very quickly with especially lager strains. And that is the type of beer that people tend to want to do secondaries, and then they want to collect this clean yeast off the bottom and use that, and it gets real powdery real quick and won't flocculate, and it also changes attenuation. Those less flocculent yeast tend to be more attenuative. They tend to finish out sugars more. So you really want you don't want the first yeast that drops, and you don't want the last yeast that drops. You want that section
middle
in between.
Of the road, yeah.
That's why with the conical fermenters, brewers will often drop that first section of yeast, and then they'll use the chunk in the middle, and then they'll discard the last portion.
Okay, so for the rest of the world that doesn't have conicals,
right,
and it sounds like you're taking it most likely from your primary. I don't. You don't even do a secondary fermentation.
Right, right. This primary secondary thing drives me nuts. You put it in the fermenter, you ferment, and then when it all completely drops clear, the beer's done, and then you can select your yeast from that. For people using buckets or carboys, the best way to do this is get yourself. I prefer a sterile container. So what I use is these Nalgene type. They're polypropylene or polyethylene. I'm not sure. You put them in. You get them in liter, 2 liter, half liter sizes. I put them in a pressure cooker. With a couple drops of water in them and sterilize them. 250 degrees. 23 minutes. So I know they're sterile. When I rack my beer out of my carboy or bucket or whatever it might be, I'll swirl the carboy around to break up the yeast cake on the bottom. I leave like a half inch of beer in there, swirl it real good, break everything up, and then I will flame the opening on the carboy, and then pour that into the sterile container, and then I put it in the fridge, and that's all I do with it.
You put it in the fridge. Now you have a huge amount of yeast. I mean, that's, right. You look at the bottom of that carboy, it's pretty thick, mm-hmm. even in a 5-gallon batch.
Right.
How long is this going to be good for?
Well, ideally, you want to use the yeast as soon as you possibly can. The sooner you use it, the better off it's going to be. What happens to the yeast when they go into that stationary phase? They start consuming their reserves. Their energy reserves are being consumed, keeping themselves alive and steady and all that.
Yeah, their carbohydrate reserves, glycogen and trehalose.
Mm-hmm. And that's going to eventually be depleted. The yeast will start consuming themselves, and you end up with just a kind of a rotting mess that smells like meat and it gets pretty nasty.
In the BN studio, right?
Right. like a BN crotch.
Right.
And ideally you want to use that. Now, different strains of yeast are going to store better than others. As far as something like Cal Ale or 1056, it will store pretty stable for a couple of weeks without a lot of loss of viability. You get something like the wheat yeasts tend to go south really fast, is what I've discovered. And I've heard Chris White from White Labs and Dave Logsdon from Y-Yeast say that the lager yeasts don't store very well and that they go south really fast. But I've found that they are as good as the Cal Ale and the others. But I don't know if that's, the way that I'm handling them or what, but they both seem very certain, and I'd trust those guys as far as what they're saying about that.
So you swirled it off. You now put it in your Nalgene or plastic container. Now, what if you don't have a Nalgene bottle? Is there any other container? I mean, can I use my, 1 liter water, Crystal Geyser water bottle?
Well,
put
you can.
A funnel or something?
You can use
I use glass jars.
Well, and the thing about glass is fine. You don't want to seal those off to where they're going to pressurize and shatter the glass, because
right.
there can still be a generation of gas. So, don't put a hard top on the glass jar. Either leave it loose or cover it with foil or cling film and a rubber band, and
right.
That'll be good as well. The nice thing about the plastics that I use and glass is generally you can sanitize those with heat.
I use mayonnaise jars, put half an inch of water in the bottom, and just loosely rest the cap on top and stick it in the microwave for a couple minutes. Let the water boil in there, heat sanitize the inside. Mm-hmm.
Okay,
so that's a nice way to do it. Some of the other plastics, like the water bottles and stuff, they're not stable under heat, so they'll melt on you.
Yeah.
So it's nice if you can heat sanitize something, because it tends to be very effective and very very cheap.
And it sounds like if you're going to be using this yeast more than once, you introduce a little bacteria, something that's not sanitary, and you could screw up the rest of your beer.
Right. Well, and keep in mind this, and this is one of the things about repitching yeast. When every time you brew, the thing's not sterile. right? There's you know, your sanitization of the you know, the carboy or bucket or whatever you're using. There's any lines you're using to transfer. There's exposure to the air. I mean, the air is just filled with dust. Even though you don't really see it, it's filled with dust. And on those dusts, you know, it's, you know,
you have
made up
some
of a lot
degree
of
contamination every time.
Every time you brew. So just starting off, you got some contamination in there. Every time you repitch this yeast, now when you go and you start and you pitch this yeast into your next brew, you're pitching some bacteria or wild yeast, perhaps, in with the good yeast. The nice thing is you're pitching enough yeast that it should readily outcompete it. But again, you will have some increase. You got another set of transfers. All this, you end up building up your contamination load, and it can be a problem. You need to be very careful if you're going to be doing this.
Now, what type of environment? I've had a chance to brew with Jamil before, and he, it's like, you know, if his grass is wet, it's not zen enough, you know, or something. The environment is important. So, right. Is there an environment to take this out of the carboy? I mean, you're doing it outside, you're doing it in the garage, because you're transferring right. The yeast. This is when the contaminants can get in.
Good point. Avoid wind. Wind and, you know, if you can, an open flame that will lift. You work next to an open flame, it'll lift all the stuff away and kind of give you a clear airspace around where you're working. And wind is probably the worst thing for brewing. I can brew in the rain. I can't brew in the wind. The wind drives me nuts. Because it, you know, brings a lot of you know, material from plants and stuff. You know, they travel on the wind, and you know, that's how it gets into your beer and ruins things.
So you brew outdoors then?
I do.
Trying to get him to brew indoors, but he just won't do it.
No.
So okay. So now I've got this, you know, giant slurry of yeast in a container. It's time to reuse it. Mm-hmm. We already know that it's going to last. You know, maybe I brew the next week. The first question is, how soon do I have to brew before I, you know, can't use this anymore? It's dying in the bottle.
Well, generally, you know, within the first week, you're okay. So if you harvest your yeast on, you know, a Saturday or a Sunday, and then, you know, you decide you're going to brew the next Saturday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, that's fine. You don't even need to, you know, add a starter or anything like that. You're just going to harvest the appropriate amount of yeast, pitch that in, and you're off to the races. Of course, that's if what you're doing with your yeast in the first place is you know, healthy. You know, the yeast that you select, you want to have, you know, healthy yeast has been properly, you know, treated. You don't want to, you know, get some package of yeast that expired 2 years ago, and you're throwing it in this barley wine, and you know, it seems like it's sort of fermented, and then you're taking the yeast off of that, and it's, you know, it stinks because I don't know, smells like, you know, a wet dog for some reason. You don't really know why, and then you're going to select this yeast and you're going to throw it into another batch of wort. Big mistake. If the
selection of the yeast is a key point. You want to select the right yeast to repitch.
Mm-hmm. Well,
your primary.
How do you do that? Well, I mean, I don't have a microscope.
Well, then, and if the beer you're harvesting from doesn't taste great, doesn't you know? I mean, there may be recipe flaws, but if the fermentation wasn't perfect and wonderful, don't reuse the yeast.
Yeah, if it doesn't taste clean.
Yep.
Don't take a chance.
Yeah, okay. that's sense. A big mistake. And of course,
don't repitch your trub. From the previous batch.
Oh, well, yeah, easier said than done. So, I mean, you know, if you don't have a conical, you're taking the yeast and your trub and your hop matter. Let's say you previously brewed a pale ale. You got hops, you got hot break, you got cold break, you got everything. How do you separate that from the yeast?
Excellent question. And I know you know the answer to this, but good job setting me up with the softball here.
Well, actually, I really want to know this. I've been having some issues with this myself.
Well, and it's actually pretty easy. It's just you know, people have questions as to, you know, what does it look like. You know, I think we need to do our first video for people, and there's probably some videos out there on the internet or some pages on it with photos on it. But essentially, you've got your container of yeast, right? And what I like to do is use a big enough container that the yeast portion is maybe, once it settles out, is maybe, you know, a quarter or less of the container. You know, a third is kind of pushing it, but a quarter or less. So if I got a 2-liter container, I've got maybe 500 mils of yeast solids at the bottom. The beer liquid may be, you know, higher at that point. What I do is, first off, I'll decant the beer off of the yeast, and then I'll put sterile water in. Uh-huh. And I'll take a volume of sterile water, usually about 4 times as much water as yeast, or 3 times, 3 to 4 times, depends on how much room, of course, you got in this container. You pour that in, shake it up, shake it real good until all the clumps, especially if you're using a flocculent yeast like a, you know, an English ale yeast will tend to be real clumpy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, break that up real good, and then just set it down on the counter. And what you'll find is if you've used enough water to thin it out enough, what you'll find is within 10 minutes, you'll see the little black bits, the Braun Huff and all that stuff will settle to the bottom, you know, bits of hops, brake material, and dead yeast cells are going to drop to the bottom of the container fairly quickly, you know, first 10 minutes. And what you'll see is you'll have this little layer of dark crud on the bottom, and then you'll have this milky kind of white-looking stuff in suspension in the water above. That's the yeast that you're going to use.
Okay.
Okay, it's in that portion.
Okay.
The little crud on the bottom is the stuff you want to throw away.
So by adding the water, you've separated it because that's the right. Denser, falls out. All right, I got a question. Now, this maybe I'm doing this all wrong. Hopefully, you guys know the answer here. I take my yeast, and I've done this quite a few times, swirl around the carboy. I pour it into an Erlenmeyer flask. Mm-hmm. Because that gives me a volume that graduated, and I can see 100, 200, 300 mils. But I just put a piece of tin foil over it, mm-hmm. put it in my fridge.
Uh-huh.
If I leave that exposed to the air, is there any issues I might have with repitching? Granted, there's tin foil on it. Critters aren't getting into it.
Right.
But is there air issues potentially with that?
No.
Yes.
Well.
No, yes?
Oh,
shoot.
It depends on the amount of time.
Right.
But when you have stored yeast without nutrients, in let's say, in this case, you have a fermented out beer, a little bit of beer that they're sitting in, or maybe you've added water, so it's a very thin medium. You know, they're gonna start working on their reserves, the glycogen and trehalose. If the more air exposure they have, the more oxygen they're exposed to, the more they'll use those reserves. Right. To try to synthesize
sterols for the cell.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so it's a question of time,
right,
and amount of air exposure that you let them have.
If you're going to be brewing soon, it's actually not that bad a thing,
right,
to let it have the oxygen. But you know, if you're going to be dragging this out a long time, you want them to kind of go to sleep, not try to be synthesizing sterols or anything like that that's going to use up their reserves more quickly. But they need to maintain their cell membrane and, you know, be able to control the influx and outflux of you know, across their membrane.
Right.
And that takes energy.
So it sounds like if you have the ability, you might as well put it in an airtight container. May help the life of the yeast, but really it sounds like also you should use it relatively quickly. Can you make a starter from this stuff, though?
The sooner you use it, the better.
Okay.
Now, if you've gone past a week, let's say, and you're, you know, let's say you're doing 2 weeks. At two weeks, I like to kind of wake up the yeast with a little bit of wort, you know, before I pitch it. So maybe, you know, 4 hours before it's going to be pitched, I will add some wort to the yeast and let it kind of get active before I pitch it. If you're going past 2 weeks, you definitely want to start making starters past that, I think. Just as a general rule of thumb. You can go longer than that, but really, ideally, you're going to use that yeast within a week or two.
Now, would you re-add any, like, diammonium phosphate, DAP, or Fermaid K, or something to that yeast, either when you store it or when you reuse it, or do you just make a standard starter if you're going to not pitch it directly?
Well, You can use a bit of nutrient, yeast nutrient, or in your starter wort when you're, you know, waking up the yeast.
Okay.
Or making a starter.
All right. So now, I think I understand where you're going with this, but the difficult thing is, how is any normal home brewer, or professional brewer for that matter, calculate the amount to repitch back in to his 5 or 10 or whatever gallon batch?
Well, and that's tricky. I mean, the only real way you can do it is by measuring the amount of cells you have. And that is, with a microscope and a hemocytometer, or you can do it with a mass spec sometimes. That'll work. But, you know, most people don't have either of those available.
Do you like the jelly beans in the mason jar? Just kind of guess how many.
Exactly. Well, and that's part of it. Okay. So a lot of people have seen a White Labs vial, right?
Right.
Okay. The amount of yeast in a White Labs vial is about 100 to 120 billion cells. It fills about 25 milliliters, 27 milliliters of a 35 milliliter vessel. That the whole tube is 35 milliliters, and that it'll fill about that much of the vessel. If you go on, and I make no money off of this, so you know, I only mention it to help people out. www.mrmalty.com. There's a yeast pitching calculator there, and the yeast pitching calculator will work with repitching yeast. And so the only reason I mention the White Labs files is that is pretty much pure yeast, very low non-yeast percentage, and it's tightly packed in that vial. I mean, it's real tight in there. If you go to the yeast pitching calculator and there's defaults there for non-yeast percentage and thickness of yeast.
Right.
If you move those to the extremes with the least amount of non-yeast and the tightest pack, you'll find that the volume of yeast equals what's in that White Labs solid
right.
portion there.
Chunky.
So the two exactly match. If you but if you just use the defaults, that tends to be what most people get when they think they got real thick yeast. Okay, so you've harvested your yeast out of the carboy, you've got it in your container, you put it in the fridge, and you wait the week. At the end of the week, the yeast at the bottom there, it's got probably the defaults of non-yeast and thickness. So right. don't mess with the defaults. They're pretty close.
Okay.
Now, yeast cells change size based on their condition and the environment and everything that's happened to them. So they can be bigger or smaller depending on a lot of different factors. And, strains will even have an effect, different strains. So it's an approximation, but it's pretty darn close. Now, what you'll put in the beer that you want to brew, and you put in your harvest date, and it'll tell you how much yeast you need to have. And let's say in this case, it'll be like 100 mils, right?
Right.
Like that container next to you, Nick, that you brought in, that's 2 liters, right?
Nasty-looking stuff, yeah.
Right, so... half of that is a liter, and 1/10 of that would be 100 mils. You know, depending on the container you have, that's one other thing. The taller and narrower the container is when you add water and shake it up, the easier you're going to see the stratification of the bad stuff and the good stuff.
Okay.
So what I like to do is look at the container and see how much yeast solids I have in there. So in our previous example, we're saying we had 500 mils of solids, right?
Right.
And we were going to add water to
it. Right.
So 500 mils, I know I need 1/5 of that amount. I decant all the beer off, okay? And I've got the 500 mils of solids. It's all slopped around on the sides now.
Right.
I add my water and I shake it up and I let it start to settle. I need 1/5 of whatever volume that is. I need 1/5 of it. Okay, after
right.
10 minutes. You don't want to let it really settle out, but while it's still in solution like that, 1/5.
Okay.
So if I've added a liter of water to my 500 mils of yeast, and I've got 1,500 mils of liquid slurry.
You still need 1/5 of that?
I need 1/5 of that, 300 mils.
There you go.
Okay, so that tells you how much to pitch. And you could just take that 300 mils, pour it into your beer, and you're good to go.
See,
you can let that yeast settle back out, or you can, what I like to do with the remainder is transfer it to another sterile container, leave that the dead cells and all the crud off the bottom, leave that, toss that away and go with clean cells in the other.
That's why I like container. Using a graduated cylinder or something. Uh-huh, uh-huh. For my slurry, because you get an idea how much is in there,
right.
And then you know, okay, if I swirl it up, I had, mm-hmm. 250 mils or 500, a thick yeast slurry,
right.
You can do the math from
there. Well, and you could take a graduated cylinder,
yeah.
And, mayonnaise jar like John's using, and, mark the jar, 50, 100 mils, 150, 200, and that should give you a pretty good idea of what you're doing. Now, Mr. Dorman was asking about, why wouldn't you just toss, everything into the next beer?
It's easy.
Well, the problem is, if you pitch too much yeast or too little yeast, right off of that, you're gonna affect the flavor. Yeast need to grow, to develop the flavors that are in beer. The cleanest of beers have esters in them. A lager is not lacking in esters. It's just, a different set, more restrained, but it's there. If you got rid of that stuff, it would taste horrible. So you need the yeast to grow and develop those flavors in your beer. So that's why one of the most important reasons for pitching the right amount. You don't want to overpitch because you're gonna impact those flavors. You can actually decrease attenuation. And a lot of people say, well, it's not attenuating enough. I'll just add more yeast. I'll add more yeast. I'll go with a really big pitch. You get to a certain point where it actually has a negative impact on attenuation. The yeast will not attenuate as much if you mm-hmm. get too much yeast in there. The other factor is that yeast cake, after fermentation, if you just toss another beer on there, a lot of those cells are already dying.
Mm.
There is material in there that's dead and dying, and do you really want to add that to your beer? Do you want to add dead yeast to your beer? Not necessarily.
You don't
the
want
best choice.
Cascade hops in your
right.
Residue in your Munich Helles. You
exactly.
Know? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that brings up another point, which is, your sequence of repitching. Do you go, you generally want to go from a lower gravity beer to a higher gravity beer, a lower alcohol beer to a higher alcohol beer. You generally want to go from lower IBUs to higher IBUs, or, from paler to darker.
Why?
Well, generally, just for flavor reasons. If you have a really hoppy or really bitter beer, the yeast will get covered in the resins from the hops. They'll absorb some of the flavors, and all that will travel on to your next beer. Same thing for color. If you have a high alcohol beer, anytime yeast is over, the alcohol is over 5%, it's very toxic to the yeast. They have a difficult time surviving in that environment. So the yeast health is going to be lower. So there's just a lot of reasons why you would do that.
Okay. So, all right, now we kind of have an idea how to get the right volume of yeast into the beer. You can do this again and again and again. How many times can you do it before it becomes maybe toxic? You picked up bacteria, something.
Well, that's going to depend on your process, how well you're treating the yeast, things like that, how much contamination you've picked
up. Sing to them.
Right, exactly. Stroke them, rub them.
All right.
Quality in equals quality out.
And, the thing that, the first pitch is good, the second pitch is better, the third pitch is magical, fourth and fifth are kind of along those lines. By the sixth, I don't know, it just depends on, how clean your process is. There are breweries that go many, many generations. I tend to cut it off around, the fourth or the fifth or maybe the sixth pitch. And usually by that time, I've run out of beer styles that I want to brew.
Right.
Now, if you're brewing the same beer every week, you can easily go quite a bit longer. But, creativity's sake, for most home brewers, you kind of give up after you've done five batches on the same type of yeast. And one of the things to keep in mind is, as these yeast pitches grow, from one pitch to the next, you've got, several times the amount of yeast you need, and you could use that for multiple types of beer, and you know, you can make from one, I usually split it into two, and then you know, you can be making four batches off that third pitch,
right,
or more.
Okay, well, seems to answer a lot of questions there. Got a bunch more for you.
Okay, well, let's do this. Let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll get into some more questions about repitching yeast.
Sure.
Keep your carboy cap on.
This is Brew Strong.
We'll be right back.
Williams Brewing is your online resource for prompt delivery of quality home brewing supplies. Since 1979, Williams Brewing has offered the finest equipment and freshest ingredients and the best customer service in the business. Cut hours off your brewing sessions by using one of their 11 varieties of famous Williams malt extract. Their Williams German Pils is mashed with pure German Moravian two-row barley malt for a light blonde color and malty crispness you just can't get from other extracts. Or check out their unique fermenters, draft beer equipment, bottling aids, and more. They even have their own line of precision hydrometers. Go to williamsbrewing.com to browse their vast selection and enter promo code BREW at the order checkout for $5 off your next order over $50. Orders placed by 3 p.m. ship the same day. Again, go to williamsbrewing.com and enter promo code BREW at checkout for $5 off your next order. Brewing is easy the Williams way.
The Brewing Network brings together the winner of the Sam Adams Long Shot Competition and the most awarded homebrewer in history to do battle in the next chapter of The Jamil Show. Can you brew it? Every episode, Jamil Zainasheff and Mike McDowell lay their reputations on the line to brew your favorite commercial beer and put their results to the test. Perfect match or perfect drain pour. Tune in for the recipes, techniques, and interviews with the pros that answer the question, can you brew it? The Jamil Show, Can You Brew It? Airs every other Monday on the Brewing Network.
Nico, listen, our lawyers said that we had to do this for 1 hour, and after this, we don't have to talk to each other for 3 more months until the next meeting.
Kids, come on, let's get out of here.
I'm supposed to have more lines. I'm the professional. Hey, it's Sully.
And I'm Nico.
And we opened the 21st Amendment 9 years ago at 563 2nd Street in San Francisco, just 2 blocks from Giants Park, to make great beer and have a great time doing it.
That's right, because to us, the 21st Amendment is more than just the right to make beer. It's the right to experiment, to be innovative, and just do things differently. And so now, we're putting our craft beer in cans.
That's right, cans. You can find our world-famous Heller High Watermelon Wheat Beer and Brew Free or Die IPA throughout California and Alaska.
And now it's also available on draft at select accounts in the Bay Area.
So next time you're at your local neighborhood pub or good beer store, be sure to ask for 21st Amendment in cans.
Because everyone likes it in a can.
Tasty crack cans.
Tasty crack cans.
You're listening to the Brewing Network.
Learning to brew has never been so disgusting. This is Brew Strong.
You know, that's funny. I was just saying how Chad gave me a boner.
What?
What? No,
What kind of bad advice did he give you?
Yeah, I missed that part of the conversation. Palmer, did you hear any of that?
Because of this excellent IPA that he brewed.
I could have told you that.
I was jonesing for some hops because I've been drinking the Moose Drool clone that we brewed for Can You Brew It. Turned out excellent. I mean, it's like Moose Drool. And I've been knocking back, like, you know, 40 ounces a night for the past few weeks. And so I'm kind of tired of a great malty beer. As great as it is, I've just really needed some hops. And so... Justin said, "Well, you know, Shat's got a good IPA there in the chest freezer. It's really hoppy." I'm thinking, "Oh, okay. Well, that's what I'm looking for." Poured that, took one whiff, and I'm like, "Sporting wood."
I just went back up my third glass. This plenty of hops. Good stuff.
Oh, it's fantastic. That's a great beer.
Dry hopped like a plenty.
Is it like a tasty clone, or what is it?
It's a tasty clone slash, I don't know, my own version of an IPA. So it's, I just kicked up the tasty, but I also crossed it with some ingredients from the 2A's mm-hmm. IPA.
Ooh. Mm-hmm.
So I kind of just built up.
Ooh, tastes a little,
two.
Tastes a little can in there.
It's a crossbred, yeah.
It was everything I needed, you know? I'll give you a big kiss later on. Right now we're talking about repitching yeast and how you do it, why you do it, you know, what the benefits are, drawbacks, things like that. So you had another question for me there,
well,
Nick?
I got one for you. One of my favorite yeasts, if you can call it that, to use is Y-Yeast Rose Lair Blend, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
and mm-hmm. you can't get that anywhere. I mean, you got to, right. like, you know, rape and pillage to get
this stuff. Every April.
Every April. Yeah. Well, yeah, yeah. But for those of us who aren't the Pope and don't have a direct line to Y-Yeast, you know, it's hard to get. So can we repitch our bacteria in lambics or sour beers, or is it possible?
You know, you can. The common wisdom is that the balance is going to start to be off, where, you know, one organism or another is going to start to dominate, and the blend will be off, and it won't quite be the same. Now, what's interesting was, I've always believed this, and I still believe that to be true. However,
Well,
in these Flanders beers, if you take you know, a Flanders beer, you drink like a Duchess, and you know, and then you get the, you leave the little dregs in the bottom of the bottle, fill it up with starter wort, you know, put a, you know, piece of foil over it, and see what it tastes like when it's done. You'd be surprised at how close that culture is, you know, developing the same kind of general flavor. I think, you know, you might actually get away with it. I wouldn't guarantee it, because I think, you know, the things are going to start to diverge from the ideal.
Right.
But I was surprised at how close. When I did a couple of these off of, you know, my own home-brewed bottled beer and like a Duchess and some others, how it actually did pretty good. At least, you know, and this is like maybe, you know, second generation.
Right.
I don't know how it would have done third, fourth, fifth generation, but I think you might be able to get away with it the, you know, one extra
You're
time.
Squeezing your sponge in your beer at that point in
right,
time,
right.
I think. Yeah. So it can be done, but it's maybe not something that, you know, you'd try more often than not. It's a wild card with those kind of beers anyway, though, really.
Right,
I mean, you know,
right.
Could turn out any.
But, you know, a lot of these you know, these Flanders types of beers and, you know, lambics and such, you know, this is done in these barrels.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, the organisms have inoculated the barrel, and they, you know, keep filling these barrels.
Yeah,
and
I was
going to kind of
mention that.
So there's some history for that working.
Yeah. You could also start the beer on a normal beer yeast and then use the repitched Rose Lair blend to kind of finish it.
Oh, okay. Sure. And I think I know that at least in Brewing Classic Styles, you guys talk about some extra specialty malts you'll add there so that secondary pitch can ferment those normally unfermentable things for those type of beers. So,
mm-hmm.
But again, repitching, it could potentially be done with those. So, but if you're 99% of beers, most people aren't brewing sour beers. You know, it's either Cal Ale or, you know, English Ale or mm-hmm. whatever they're pitching. Is the flocculation going to affect your repitch? Because I'm looking at, you know, I look at a slurry of White Labs O2, and it is like packed tight. That's a mm-hmm. really flocking, at least yeast. And then I look at O1. Out of the same, you know, 5-gallon carboy, and it looks like I have three times as much yeast in there. So you got to know your yeast when you're going to repitch it, right?
Yeah, but you know, even the English ale yeast and Cal ale yeast from White Labs. Now, one is more flocculent than the other, and tends to, you know, the English tends to form like a cheese almost. I mean, it's chunkier,
right.
Almost like a tofu.
Looks curdled if you look at me.
Yeah.
If you ask me,
almost like a tofu. It's kind of that kind of consistency, right?
Right.
But you know, even tofu has, like, you know, a lot of liquid and space in it. And it's kind of more spongy than it is a solid mass. So
right.
it can pack tight. But I still think, you know, you're pretty close on that. I think, you know, the repitching is about right. Now, one of the things you want to do is that I've always advocated is learning your yeast. So it's nice. One of the advantages of repitching is that you know, you get to learn how a yeast behaves, and you can use the same yeast, you know, five times in a row, you know, in five different recipes, or even in the same recipe, and you kind of get a sense of how it behaves at different temperatures, different gravities, work gravities, things like that will really, you know, give you quite an education on the flavors that a yeast can develop. And you can try different things, and you know, the more you use that yeast under different conditions, the more you learn about it, and what to expect, and you get that sense memory, and you say, well, you know, at this temperature and this kind of strength beer, I should really be tasting this, but it tastes different. Ah, maybe there's something wrong with my yeast, and then you can you know, take action.
I was talking to Shat earlier, and he said that he was going to be brewing one of any beers, kind of a clone, right? Weren't you going to be brewing?
No.
Okay. Yeah, I apparently wasn't paying attention. Okay, so if you're brewing a Belgian beer, then I swore you said you're brewing like a Damnation or one of those.
Oh, yeah. I have a Temptation and Secondary right now.
Okay, okay.
Clone. Temptation clone.
Brewed it. Okay.
Sorry, yeah.
So you're brewing these Belgian beers, and one of the things that people like to do with Belgians is ferment them a little bit more hot, right?
Uh-huh.
Maybe kind of get those, you know, proprietary esters and flavors. Can I repitch the yeast that is fermented hot, is that going to do something bad to my yeast, maybe, you know, or can I continue to use those?
You can. You know, generally, high temperatures don't have too negative an effect on, you know, within the realm of fermentation temperatures, high temps really don't have that negative an impact. So you're okay. I mean, high alcohols and high IBUs tend to have more of an impact. That's one of the things that I think is lost on people. They, and you find people putting hops in their starters, which you really shouldn't do. They go, "Oh no, it keeps it sanitary." Well, the whole mechanism by which hops improve, you know, the sanitary aspect of a wort is that, you know, the hop resins will coat you know, the bacteria cells. It'll coat all the cells in there. That's yeast cells too, and you know. So, you know, it's not so good for the viability of the cells. It stops the cells from replicating. So
right.
the bacteria and your yeast, it'll impact your yeast's ability to replicate and ferment the beer. It's also an important reason why, you know, the amount that you pitch, as far as the amount of, you know, people who go, "Oh, no, I don't need to worry about this pitching rate. I can pitch the whole thing," you know. Well, if you like hoppy beers or bitter beers and you pitch a lot of yeast, you know, it tends to take a lot of the bitterness out of the beer as well. So it tends to, you know, the more surface area you have, the more, you know, hot bitterness is going to be impacted.
All right, so if you're one beer that's going to win you the Ninkasi Award, AHA Championship, here it comes down to this beer. If you could repitch your yeast to do this, or if you could use a bunch of beer made from a, you know, yeast from a fresh vial, what would you choose to do?
For me, it's repitched.
Okay.
Repitched yeast.
So you're that big, you're that serious about repitching. Yeah. This is that key to brewing, you know, award-winning beer.
Yeah, you can make some great beer off of repitched yeast. And again, you know, go to any, you know, brewery, you know, commercial brewery that really knows their stuff, and the brewer who really knows what's going on and is making killer beer, and they'll tell you, oh yeah, you know, it's not until we're, you know, a couple generations in that things really seem to settle down and do right. Now, the reason they restart is you don't want your yeast to mutate too far.
Right.
You don't want to, you know, maybe you've messed up on, you know, the selection and your flocculation's changing and attenuation's changing. Maybe you're picking up a little bit too much bacteria, things like that. You know, that's one of the reasons why you go to the trouble of restarting.
Right. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. Actually, you know, not to throw any brewers under the bus, but I found that if you friendly with your local brew pub, they'll sometimes just give you a little pull of yeast right off the bottom of their conical fermenter. Makes it so much easier.
Yeah, you know, the times I've done that, I've found that quality wasn't so great.
Depends on where you're going, I guess.
Yeah, you know, now some of them, I imagine I could get some great yeast from, but, you know, the times I did, I was not pleased with the level of bacteria in it, and you know, just overall health. I was kind of a little bit surprised.
I can imagine part of that relating it to the homebrew world is that these brewers' beer being consumed very fast, relatively speaking.
Especially, well, it depends.
Brew pubs, let's
say. Some pubs, yeah.
You know, but for the average homebrewer who may be sitting, you know, doesn't apply in the brewing network as a beer. This IPA is going to be empty, by the way, by the time the show's done. But the, you know, you're storing your beers, and Jamil's known, for sometimes 5 or 6 years. So your sanitation has to be key, right?
Well, I would say, you know, a packaging brewery, they generally, you know, if they're not pasteurizing, they really need to have, you know, good, you know, sanitation and good quality that way.
Right.
And so, that tends to be cleaner. You know, if you can just transfer, you know, cold to cold and store cold and, you know, serve it pretty quick.
Right.
You know, like most pubs do, then, and that's not to say that some pubs don't have, you know, great sanitation and you can get great yeast from them. I'm sure that's the case, probably more times than not. But I was just surprised at the number that didn't meet that standard.
Does it matter whether you start with liquid or dry yeast? Can you repitch either?
You can repitch either. You know, things happen to dry yeast where you know, flocculation changes and sulfur production changes and things like that. But you know, dry yeast is just so cheap that a lot of times it really doesn't make sense, but you can
right.
Repitch any yeast, yeah.
Yeah, it just depends on what you have on hand.
So right. Going back to the commercial yeast, basically, why do you think it's such a bad sample, or the quality's not there? Would you rather top crop? I mean, is that a better, you know, sample of the healthy yeast versus getting the bottom of the plug?
Right. Top cropping is definitely, you know, healthier yeast. You know, you're going to get your healthiest yeast that way. And it's a good way to go, but the number of commercial breweries where you can do that is probably slim and none. I mean, you go down to Anchor and ask them if you can whip your bucket across their their flat square fermenters, and for a little Anchor steam yeast, they probably say no. But
as home brewers, I mean.
Right.
That
you can break into Anchor Brewing and whip the bucket across. Now, nobody do that because then I'm going to get in trouble. People at Anchor won't let me in anymore. You know, as a home brewer, especially
from your own.
Yeah, and I think that what Chad's getting to is if you have a bucket or a conical fermenter or something like that, you can lift the lid and you can go ahead and harvest that way. I know Tasty does that. And with good success.
I just want to clarify earlier, and I've heard you use this term in the Jamil show probably 4 or 5 times, you washing your yeast or cleansing your yeast or whatever the term is. And I think Justin had mentioned during break that the chat had brought this up is, you know, what is the difference? I mean, exactly, washing your yeast. You said you used distilled water, and again, or not distilled water, you used water, sterile water, right?
Mm-hmm. Sterile.
And that helps,
not distilled.
Helps separate the trub and other junk that's in there from the actual slurry of yeast, right?
Right.
So what was that process again? You just
add water and shake.
Add water and shake.
I know it's complex. And there's, you know, the question that comes up all the time is kind of, you know, we talk about, you know, washing your yeast or cleaning your yeast, rinsing your yeast. Technically, you know, yeast washing I think, you know, that term belongs to acidifying the water and the yeast, and you take it down to a very low pH, which essentially stuns the bacteria and is a method of cleaning up a pitch of yeast that may have a too high a bacteria count.
Right.
Okay. Rinsing yeast is really what we're talking about. Just adding some water, giving it a quick rinse to kind of let, you know, thinning it out enough so that the dead and other crud just falls to the bottom. That's rinsing. And let's say washing is, you know, a treatment of the yeast to reduce the bacteria count.
Okay. I was on a forum when I first started homebrewing. It probably Beer Pal. Justin, but whatever form, and somebody said, "Oh, you take Budweiser and you just pour that in, and that'll be clean enough to wash your yeast. It's beer." Would you do that? Can you do that? Probably the only good use for Budweiser.
Right. Well, one of the, and I had a friend who was a big advocate of that, and he was saying, well, you know, the carbonation helps kind of, you know, scrub and separate the materials. And so I've tried that in the past, and I don't know. I think sterile water works just as well,
yeah,
and
right.
It's far cheaper.
Yeah.
If anything, less alcohol.
If not better, because you don't get all that foaming.
Yeah.
I usually have to wash my yeast two or three times before I get the quality of slurry from the batch that I want to store. Very often when I'm...
You got dirty slurries, John.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, I've got
dirty,
a lot of hop matter in the
boy,
bottom
you.
Of the carboy and or the bucket. And unless, I mean, when I'm using buckets, then I'll decant the beer off, you know, and rack it to the keg. And then I can easily take a sanitized spoon, like a big steel spoon, and dip out my slurry, you know, and keep the spoon off the bottom where all the trub is. And I can get a nice white yeast, you know, kind of from the middle on top of the yeast cake there in the primary fermenter.
You need yourself a whirlpool chiller is what you need.
That, I'm telling you.
Leave all that break material and hops behind.
I do that, but I also use, you know, I also use other methods.
Well, if you didn't,
I'm kind of speaking
raffle.
In general. You know, yeah. We have a lot of different brewers out there. If you're using a carboy, you
no, we don't.
Having
everybody brews like us, John.
Yeah. Come on now. We all brew on rims. What, do you have a rim system, right?
Yeah. Outer rims.
Yes. Outer rims. Okay.
Yeah, but, you know, if you use the carboy, you know, I'll again, you know, decant off most of the beer. I have a little bit left. I'll kind of swirl it up. I don't shake the whole thing up because I don't want all the trub, but I'll get, you know, a yeast suspension going. I'll pour that into a jar. Let it settle, and very often, you know, the color of the yeast will be kind of off white, you know,
like a cream.
Yeah, it's
right,
and it can, and depending on how much trub I got in, I'll look at that and say, okay, I want to resuspend and pour and leave the, you know, leave some trub in the jar and pour it off into another sterile jar, like Jamil said, and, you know, get a cleaner yeast pitch.
Okay.
And you do that with boiled water or sterile water, you know, doesn't have air in it, because again you're trying to protect those glycogen and trehalose reserves in your yeast.
No, I got a question for you here. You know, you're planning on brewing the week after, okay? Mm-hmm. And you know you're going to save your yeast. You work hard to harvest it. It doesn't happen. And you don't brew, it'd be all right. Yeah. To what point is the question? Because that just happened to me. The last two times I've harvested my yeast, I've gone three months thinking I was going to brew this beer with the
months,
same yeast.
You're probably pushing it. You know, if you're okay. So here's the thing that, you know, people freak out about on this whole secondary idea. And they're like, well, the yeast is going to die, and then, you know, it's going to make this horrible stench in my beer, and, you know, I'm going to be meaty and all this stuff. I was like, look, if the yeast was going to die that fast, you know, White Labs and Y Yeast wouldn't be able to sell a product.
Right.
Right? They wouldn't be able to ship it to you, you know, to your door quick enough for you to be able to use it.
Right.
It's good and stable for quite a period of time. Now, yes, viability drops, and if you have bacteria, one of the reasons that Y Yeast and White Labs can sell their product is, one, they put a lot of thought into maximizing the reserves, the energy reserves that the yeast has when it goes in the package, and they put a lot of effort into making sure there's no bacteria in there, right? If you've got bacteria mixed in with your yeast and the yeast start to die, the bacteria start to grow, things like that. This is one of the reasons you want to store your yeast as cold as possible. You want to get it definitely below 40, okay? You don't want to freeze any of your cells, so you tend to be, you know, 32 or above. If you're storing it in beer, sterile beer, the alcohol in there will help a little bit against freezing, but again, you really don't want to drop below 32. So Fahrenheit, 0°C, or, you know, 40 Fahrenheit.
Okay. Shat, did you repitch with this IPA?
No.
This is like the tastiest. I mean, it's really good.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Pretty happy with it. Yeah.
That's an excellent beer.
Yeah. So how about as far as going up in temp? I mean, how high can you go if you're just storing?
Just store it on your counter. Doesn't matter, do that, I mean, right? Wouldn't want to do that.
Right. Well, you know, if you're getting ready to brew that day, that's fine. But
several weeks.
Yeah, you don't want to do that. The warmer it is, the more they're going to use up their energy reserves. So yeah.
Use color as your indicator too. If you've stored yeast in the fridge for, you know, a couple, 3 weeks, a month, 2 months, as that yeast starts to turn brown, you know, towards the color of peanut butter, you're getting more yeast dying off, and you're definitely going to want to pitch to a starter and probably maybe separate out again. Make sure you've got good white healthy yeast cells going into your beer.
And you can smell it too. And here's another thing: if you're storing with the beer, which I like to do, you know, as long as it wasn't too high in alcohol beer, you can pour a little bit of that beer out into a glass. Taste it.
That's gross.
And it's the same beer you put in the keg.
I guess.
Right?
I don't know.
Nothing wrong with it.
Something about that.
You put the beer into the keg, and if nothing's happened to your yeast, it should be the same beer.
Yeah, true.
Right?
That's true.
If it tastes bad, then your yeast has probably gone a little too far south. Yeah. All right. So let's take another break, and when we come back, we'll get to the questions in the chat room. Back after this.
Smart. Brew strong.
This is Brew Strong.
Ever notice the pathetic look on the face of the Brewcaster poster boy? That's the look of a child that survives on ramen noodles and home brew. Subprime Meltdown doesn't even begin to describe what this kid has been through. He lives this grim existence for his army, the Brewing Network Army. Times are tough for everybody. It's like getting stuck in time 2 days before payday. Cash is tighter than a post-it IOU stuck in a stripper's sweaty G-string. The unicorn's horn is limp and the rainbow has lost its color. But you can help change all that. If you were to take that sparkling change in your pocket and plop it on the table for the BN instead of that extra pint at happy hour, then the world could be a brighter place. When you buy a round for the BN, you buy a round for yourself and your fellow soldiers, and that's what it's all about. That and being entered into the reoccurring donor monthly raffle. So step up and start your own economic stimulus package. For just a few bucks a month, you can stimulate the unicorn, the rainbow, and a brewcaster. Hit that donate button just like you'd hit on that crazy bitch at the bar right after last call. You'll be really happy about it in the morning.
Hey, Push, the new brewery's looking good.
Thanks, Finn. Piece by piece.
Well, let's fire her up. Whoa! Is that a new kettle?
Yeah, just got it brand new, but paid half price.
What? And that blade scale?
40% off.
The new tap handle?
$5 instead of 13. Got a new regulator for the brew stand, too, but $5 instead of 25.
Dude, where are you stealing all this stuff from?
Where else? The More Beer Deal of the Day.
Announcing the Beer, Beer, and More Beer Deal of the Day. Every day, a new fantastic deal from big items to small that will blow you away. Boil kettles, carboy carriers, sterile siphon starters, digital timers. Watch morebeer.com every day for a new deal, and you just might find the item you've been waiting for at a price you cannot believe. Hurry, because stock is limited on most items.
And that sweet Guinness cap, let me guess.
The More Beer Deal of the Day.
Yeah, I knew it. Come on, let's brew something.
Find the More Beer Deal of the Day at morebeer.com. Celebrity voices impersonated.
Hey, what are you doing, man?
Writing a review of WLP 400.
What? You're reviewing yeast?
Yeah. White Labs has home brewer reviews of all their strains. Are you new to these interwebs? Check it out.
That's awesome.
White Labs, your source for great yeast, invites all brewers to visit whitelabs.com to read and write your own reviews of all their yeast strains. Get real-world tips and tricks from other brewers who have made the most of their vials and post your own experiences. It's another way White Labs brings you closer to the best yeast on the planet.
And send. There you go. You misspelled flocculate, dude.
What?
White Labs. It's all in the vial.
Back to the beer guys that make other beer guys look like wine guys. Brew strong.
All right, we're back. We're talking repitching yeast, why you do it, and all that good stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the benefits of supporting Brewing Network is these shows are done live. This isn't just podcasting. This is radio. And if you're listening live, you can go to thebrewingnetwork.com. There's a button to listen live and to chat with other listeners during the show. And you actually get a chance to ask questions. Or, you know, feedback. Justin's on the chat during the show, and he can kind of monitor what's going on. That's a segment of the show we're into now. Justin, you got some questions from the chat room on repitching yeast?
I do. As you suspected, Jay-Z, it's a popular topic. A lot of people want to know about yeast repitching. Mm-hmm. So let's start with some of the things. Some of these things are going to be recaps of what you guys talked about, but people were still asking late in the show, so that's for some clarification. So lots of questions about washing yeast.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll put it to you in two parts. The first was, do we really need to do this to wash our yeast? And the second is, if so, how?
Okay. So, again, if we're talking washing, would be, you know, acidifying your water and, you know, using that to, you know, get the entire pH down below a certain point that it stuns the bacteria and the yeast, you know, you've cleaned up your pitch yeast. The problem with that is it also negatively impacts the yeast. And generally, if you've gotten to the point where you're worried about contamination, bacteria in your yeast, start over. Get yourself a fresh pitch. You know, go buy yourself another White Labs vial or a YE smack pack and start again. That's much better than, you know, messing around with a pitchy yeast that's questionable and messing up, a big batch of wort that you paid $30 for. So I would tend to avoid that. Now, rinsing yeast, where you just add some sterile water, shake it up, and, you know, in 10 minutes the crud drops to the bottom and you decant off, you know, that definitely you want to do.
I think we got to clarify one thing on that, too, is that if you get a little trube, you get some of the other junk in your next pitch, it's not the end of the world. You don't want to dump the whole thing.
True.
But you get a little bit, it's not a huge deal. I mean, it's not this meticulous process. It's,
well, maybe yours isn't meticulous.
Well,
but,
yeah, you know. Exactly. That's why my beers last about a week.
Yeah, you know, it certainly helps, but like Nick's saying, it's definitely not the end of the world. It's you know, it's okay. You want to kind of you know, reduce the load as much as possible. So not quite as big a load.
Right.
Smaller loads.
It's always big load with me.
And then a follow up to that is, does boiling and cooling tap water make that water sterile enough to use for this washing process?
Sterile enough. It does not make the water sterile. It sanitizes the water, but it's not sterile at that point. Is it sanitized enough to use for this process? Yes.
Okay.
I wouldn't worry about it once it's boiled and cooled.
Not boiled for 1 minute, but let it go for, you know, 4 or 5 minutes, right?
Yeah, it's fine. You're just not going to kill, you know, the any insisted
spores.
No spores, and anything that forms a cyst tends to, you know, be more resistant to heat. So those types of things. But you'd be okay. I wouldn't worry about it.
Okay. Here's a question for you. Listener wanted to find out if Jamil ever reused a slurry from a high-gravity beer for a smaller-gravity beer, and if the yeast then really goes out of whack from fermenting that large beer. This person says he's used 8% plus beers, slurries, to brew milds afterwards. So what's your experience with that?
I have. And yeah, it's maybe like a, you know, 9-10% barley wine, and down to, you know, I just, you know, I tend to save all the yeast, and I have them in containers. You know, I have plenty of sterile containers, and so I'll harvest the yeast. And a lot of times, unless I'm just very, you know, sometimes I don't know why, but I'll save it, and I'll go from that to the next batch. And I've used it in a smaller beer. And while I won't say it turned out bad, I will say it turned out different. And it didn't turn out as good as it could have been on those smaller beers. So I noticed a difference. And, you know, keep in mind, any time that you have a higher alcohol, anything past 5%, you know, the higher the alcohol, the more the yeast struggle to keep that alcohol outside of their cells. Alcohol is toxic to yeast. That's why they excrete it. It's like if you were swimming in a bathtub of your own pee, all right?
Like last night?
Right?
Yeah.
Like most nights around here. Mm-hmm. And the thicker that pee, the more intense it is on you trying to keep it out of your mouth and out of your eyes and all that, and oh, you're struggling against it.
That's a good part.
Well, that you know, that's essentially what's happened to the yeast, and they really struggle against that. So, you know, the yeast tend to be not in such a great shape. I guess, you know, if you go ahead and, you know, take a portion of that yeast to make a starter and grow it up under good conditions, yeah, you could reuse that yeast without a trouble. But, you know, going straight from, you know, a high gravity beer to, or, you know, high IBU beer to a low one, yeah, you tend to, I think, you want to step in between there.
Okay. All right, another question about, I guess, vessels that you're using when you're maybe storing this. Someone wanted to know, do you need to autoclave your Nalgene? What's a Nalgene bottle? Anyone want to tell? That's, oh, I see. Explain right, that to the listeners.
I brought one in here we can describe.
Polypropylene, I think. Polypropylene bottles, kind of slightly opaque, bottles with a screw top on them.
Okay.
Nalgene is a manufacturer, and I've just always known them as Nalgene.
You can actually Google Nalgene, and I think LabSafetySupply.com, LSS.com has Nalgene brand bottles online.
So it's lab-grade containers.
Right, autoclavable.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so the question then is, do you need to autoclave your Nalgene bottle, or can you just sanitize it with StarSan?
You can sanitize it with StarSan. You know, the more sanitary something is, the higher your kill level, the less contamination you're carrying forward. And StarSan's probably fine, but you know, you could fill that thing with boiling water and it won't melt. So you could submerge it in boiling water and boil it for 15 minutes and get the whole thing to 212. I guarantee you that at that point, you're not going to have any problems with it, for certain. And if you can sterilize it at 250, you know it's truly sterile, and you're not going to have any mold or spores or, you know, anything untoward growing in that thing.
All right, a little recap here. You know, a big question on everybody's mind is, you know, how long this yeast can sit in the refrigerator is commonly what people are asking before being able to repitch it.
Well, again, it depends on the strain of yeast, and it depends on the initial health of the yeast when it was harvested and what you're storing it in. If you've harvested yeast from a high gravity beer, the yeast is pretty stressed at the end of that. And if you're trying to store it in 10% alcohol, that's kind of a mistake. You should probably go ahead and rinse it and you know, store it in something else. You know, there's a good use for like a Budweiser. You know,
right.
You know, store it in that if you want, or you can store it in sterile water. That's fine.
My personal experience has been if it's a high gravity beer, that your yeast is not going to last long at all. If it's coming from a high gravity, lower gravity. Mm-hmm. If I make a starter, if it's within 2 or 3 months and I can make a starter, probably not too worried about bacterial contamination. So.
Well, and, you know, it'll last longer. If it's coming from low gravity beer, the yeast tend to be in better shape. And, you know, you could leave that pitch of yeast in the fridge for, you know, several weeks and you're probably okay. If it's coming from a high gravity beer, you know, the reserves are not quite the same. You know, the yeast, again, struggles against keeping the alcohol out and burns its reserves along those lines. And, you know, within a week, you want to make sure you're reusing that.
All right, here's a borderline on-topic question that we'll squeeze in for our BN tattooed brother, Henning, who wants to know. He says, hey, I had a really old vial of Belgian yeast, and I put it in a small starter. Do I need to worry about getting it off the trube and old yeast, or can I just step it up and not worry about it?
You know, you can step it up. At some point, you want to discard any dead cells, especially, and any break material is, you know, again, I think it's nice to discard that, you know, the bigger chunks.
Okay.
So, you know, if you can do that, and you can do it by the same method that we're talking about here, which is, you know, if you tend to have a lot of break material in there and a lot of trube, you know, rinse it with some sterile water, you know, let the crud fall to the bottom, and, you know, use the good stuff that's floating around up top.
Okay. And that's it from the chat room. I just do want to reiterate what Jay-Z was talking about earlier about the live program. If you want a more interactive experience and be able to hang out with some of your brewing brothers and sisters, do hit the chat now button on the homepage when we're live. There's a lot of people in there tonight, and not just talking about beer, but also having a good time. But, for example, when we were talking about Nalgene bottles, one of our listeners was already posting the website that they can go check it out. So it's very interactive.
Great.
And if you're just looking for a little more beer geekiness in your life, hit the chat now button on our page when we're live, because it's always very cool in there and good people asking solid questions. There you go, Jay-Z. It's all yours.
That's what I need, more beer geekiness in my life.
Yes, I'm sure everybody's family agrees. That
wasn't quite maximized enough as it is.
Yeah.
Beer, I need to listen to Bruce Strong live so I can ask some questions.
I'd love to hear Palmer's wife's reaction to him needing more beer geekiness in his life, too.
Palmer.
Yep, it's... That's what makes families great.
That they put up with you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Until they shoot you in your sleep.
Yeah.
It's great.
It has happened before.
Yeah.
All right.
So we've covered repitching yeast and, you know, why you'd want to do what it is. It's, you know, reusing the yeast from a batch, and, you know, you grow a lot more yeast. You know, why you do it, not only just for cost savings, but because you can get a proper amount of yeast into your next batch, and, you know, the yeast seem to, you know, kind of sync up with your brewing, you know, environment, and, you know, the later pitches of yeast just seem so much better. I don't know how to explain it better than that. I'm sure somebody like Chris White could kind of give us some doctoral thesis on why that might be. You know, the things you want to do, you want to select the right type of yeast, not the very early flocculator, not the very late flocculator. You want to rinse it with some sterile water, or at least some highly sanitized water through boiling, and you know, get rid of any break material and dead cells if you can, and then you also want to pay attention to how much yeast you're pitching. Use the yeast pitching rate calculator and figure out kind of the volume of yeast you need, and you know, you go from there. Maybe you need a little bit more, maybe you need a little bit less. It just depends on your kind of environment and how things go, and that should get you some pretty good beer. And if I was to make a award-winning beer, I like the repitched yeast. It makes a big difference for me. You know, those beers always tend to do better. They tend to be
all
good.
Right.
Of course, you got to worry about you know, making sure everything's sanitary. And if there's any doubt at all about the beer that the yeast came from, then you don't want to reuse that yeast.
Excellent. Okay.
And I'd like to put a special thanks out to Beer, Beer, and More Beer, morebeer.com. They have been the sponsor, and they're giving us, you know, all these great goodies to give away. If you get a chance, you know, sign up to donate to the BN, and every month you'll be entered in these giveaways, $2 a month. And it helps support programming like this, and it helps support the show we got up next. If you're listening live, you're going to come up on a show about DMS.
Oh, yeah.
And DMS is not like a rap group. DMS is
Rough Riders,
a brewing related term. And
dimethyl sulfide.
John's got a lot of data on that, and I'm just going to sit back and let my throat rest.
Right.
And I think we're going to have a great show.
Palmer's going to get his geek on when DMS happens.
And I'm not getting right. Jamil's throat any rest in this next few minutes here.
Yeah. Yeah. Not so deep that the next time.
Privacy in the studio, please, Palmer.
Jeez. Oh, why I put up with this, I don't know. But I enjoy it for some odd reason. I think it's great stuff. So thank you very much for joining us on this yeast repitching exercise. And Brew Strong.
Brew Strong.
Brew Strong, everybody.